Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Oh, boy, want to know some behind-the-scenes secrets of sex therapists? Well, you're in the right place, because Dr. Lori Buckley and I, Dr. Diana Wiley, are two seasoned sex therapists, and we're about to share. Welcome back, Dr. Lori.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a fun show. I'm excited to hear what you have to say. And we will talk about some of behind-the-scenes things that happen in our offices, which I imagine a lot of people might be curious about.
I think so, too. And that's why we're going to do it. Well, I was thinking one way we might begin our conversation, Dr. Lori, is to hear your background, you know, a brief version, and how you got interested in being a sex therapist, and then it'll be my turn, and I'll do the same. So your background.
Yeah, I like that you prefaced it with brief version, because, you know, I could go on,
yeah.
But it's something that I have always done. So when I decided I wanted to be a therapist, I knew from the very beginning I wanted to work with couples. And sex has always been something that has interested me. Now, you may not even know this about me, but my maiden name, my name that I was born with, is Masters. That's my last name. And
I love it.
When I was in high school.
I did not know that about you.
Yes, my boyfriend's name, his last name, was Johnson. And this is a true
story.
Oh, my
goodness. You probably thought you were meant to be.
Exactly. And in my family, it was just a thing that we talked about. So sex was not something that, or something that we didn't keep secret. And I know that's unusual in a lot of families, but both of my parents were very sexual and maybe talked about it too much, which I think I may have talked about before. But it was just always something that interested me. And I sort of became the expert among my friends. Of course, I knew nothing, but they thought I knew everything, and I thought I knew everything, so I would be the one they would go to when they were having boy problems or girl problems and wanted some advice. So I thought, well, this would be perfect for me to get into.
Absolutely, and that's actually a pretty good example of how it's all in the presentation. If you come across as self-confident, and this actually can spill over into some advice for couples. There are some times, we'll come back to our own personal backgrounds, but there are some times that couples can fake it till they make it.
I agree 100%, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that when I got older, it did become much more solid. My parents were both married and divorced five times,
yeah.
So I came from that, and I was always curious about what made some people be able to stay married, and then it became a very personal and really motivating thing for me to understand love. And when I decided to focus on sex therapy, I just found it so incredibly rewarding, and just still so, and we've talked about this, you and I, and we'll talk about it some more today, but
yes.
I find it to be so just, not just rewarding and satisfying personally, which of course it is, because I can help people and see them right there and then, just in a relatively quick amount of time, just change their lives. I just find it, so not just personally, but also professionally, I just gain so much and learn so much from the people that I see in my office.
That was part of the attraction for me about sex therapy, too, that you can see the results. You give them homework, home play assignments, and if they do them, they'll come back with usually interesting stories, and we explore if there's resistance, what's that about? And then the happy stories. But it's my early on experience 35 plus years ago was I really, as I was deciding how I would specialize, I really wanted something better than a really depressed client who was suicidal, because I had one of those, and I was a brand new therapist. And he had been an active alcoholic for a long time, war veteran, had a gun. I only had two sessions with him, and then he went into a park in San Jose and shot himself to death. And I was just devastated. But my supervisor said this had been in the works for a long time. But that really convinced me that I wasn't quite prepared to do this seriously depressive, suicidal work. That sex therapy can be more satisfying and actually more fun.
And less risky in terms of that. Yeah. Of course, there's always risk. But nobody can prepare for that. That's just, especially mm-hmm. so early on in your career. I'm so sorry that happened. Wow, what a tragic story. Yeah, I didn't know that.
And I stayed in touch with his widow, which sort of had some closure. But it was shocking to me that a brand new client would go and shoot himself. So, but sex therapy, I interrupted you just to make that comment.
No, you didn't. No, not at all. We're on the same page, I think.
We're on the same page,
yes. It's a very different thing. Yeah, it's more life-enhancing. It's about people who, not that they're not having crises or struggles. There are challenges and crises and all kinds of things that happen with couples and with sex. But it is just something that really changes their life in, I think, what you were saying and or what we were both saying, in a very relatively quick and measurable, tangible way.
Absolutely. And like you, we were sharing our backgrounds and how we got into being sex therapists. Like you, my parents were very affectionate with each other, and there was nothing overt, but I remember that my sister and I had to be very quiet Sunday afternoons. Their door was closed with a lock, and and they were having a afternooner, and another time they were in a bubble bath together. The bathroom door wasn't locked, and they were playing and laughing in the bubble bath. So I had some, and they actually had a conversation with us. I was in about fifth grade on a car trip, and from about Santa Barbara to Los Angeles, they gave us the facts of life. That was very unusual in the late 50s for now for parents to do that.
You were very lucky.
I was, and I knew my parents liked sex, and they gave us a very good rendition of the birds and the bees talk, my father leading, my mother coming in on menstruation and so on. But they said sex is a beautiful thing, and it provides a lot of pleasure. I do think my parents were quite evolved. And
yes.
But the caveat was, but wait until you're married. And my mother chimed in, you'll give a gift to your husband. Well, I never did that, but I decided I wanted to postpone marriage. I didn't marry until I was 2 months short of 30, and I was not going to be a virgin for all of my 20s.
She didn't say that. She actually told me the opposite, because my mom was told the same sort of thing. And basically she was told that if she was not a virgin, nobody would want her. And then she ended up having sex with a boy, and she thought nobody would want her, so she ended up marrying him because she didn't think she had a choice. So she didn't want me to make those same, mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we both had an early interest in sexuality.
Yeah.
And I've already shared how I got into it. I thought it would be just much more satisfying. And also the fact that I was really comfortable talking about sex. There are some, even therapists, who are not, and they're not trained like we are, but they're not so comfortable talking about sex.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the norm. Most people aren't comfortable talking about sex, and therapists, mm-hmm. They're no different. Mm-hmm. And they're not, you know, the training is, I think we've talked about this, but the training that is required for a marriage and family therapist or a psychologist is very, very minimal when it comes to sex.
I know.
Unless you, mm-hmm. yeah, and I think the people who are interested in sex, they know that if they're going to be a couples therapist, that that's a big part of it. So I think they become sex therapists. And there's not that many of us, relatively speaking, you know, compared to, we'll say, conventional couples therapists. It's getting better. I do think it's yes. getting better, but I see in my practice, I'm sure you see the same thing, many, many couples, I would say, you know, at least 50%, who have been to conventional couples therapy and they're there to see me. Either they're still in couples therapy, but their therapist won't talk about sex or they know it's not a comfortable thing, or they did therapy for, you know, years sometimes and it was never addressed. So they are coming
yes,
now.
I've had clients,
somebody
who, I've had clients like that
right?
too. The therapist who does not have training in sexuality is very wise to refer on. She can often still help the couple with some of their communication problems, but of course we do that too.
Right.
In fact, I have to do for a lot of my, well, finish the first thought, that therapist is wise to refer on to a specialist, a sex therapist. But I think that being a sex therapist means to be really open and to be comfortable talking about sex. We've already done that before. And sometimes this is a revelation for our clients. But the point I wanted to make, backing up, is that I have to do psychotherapy often before I can really get into sex therapy. Because if a couple's really angry with each other and they don't communicate well, they're not going to want to go do the home play assignments that we might assign. So I'm sure that's true for
right.
you, too. That you have to do psychotherapy before sex therapy.
Yeah, it's very, very rare that a couple comes in and we just talk about sex. Sometimes they'll preface it with, our relationship mm-hmm. is perfect, everything is great, we're best friends, we never fight, we just want to have sex, so that's why we're coming to see you. But as you know, that's usually a red flag, right?
Yeah.
So why aren't they having sex? So when we start to get a little deeper, it ends up there are things that just have been avoided that haven't been discussed. So it happens every now and again, but it's very rare where we just start talking about sex and that's all that needs to be addressed. There's usually some old pains or resentments and some communication or conflict management. And just like you said, sometimes some deeper psychotherapy about what's getting in the way of their arousal or their desire. So it's many layered, as I like to say. Nothing is so simple.
Many layered. And so I think for those who are listening and might be contemplating looking for a sex therapist, certainly ASECT is one place to go. ASECT stands for American Association for Sex Therapists, Educators. Thank you.
Yeah.
Educators, counselors, and therapists.
It's a lot to say in one breath, yeah.
So they have a list of ASEC certified people. And but, like, you are also a licensed psychologist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. So I think ideally you want to find a certified sex therapist who has a state license in whatever state you're in of marriage and family or a psychologist or something. Because sex is never in a void or a vacuum. And so you need to deal with the whole relationship and
absolutely.
The part that sex plays in it. Yes.
Yeah, it's true, right? There are people who call themselves sexologist or I don't know. There's all different kinds of things. But you're right. For the most part, it is, it's a complicated process. And I mean, yeah, it was complicated, but we'll just say it's not so black and white. And if you can get someone who is trained as a couples therapist or in some, you know, mental health as well as sexuality, you're going to be doing much better. And you're going to find it much more rewarding, I think. So that's what we do. And, I mean, look at it. I think that there are lots of people who listen to your show who get a lot out of listening to whatever it might be, things to improve their sex life or things to improve their relationship. And a lot of times, whether it's a book or a podcast or some kind of instructional DVD, I mean, there's lots of great resources out there, although there's lots of resources that aren't so great. But it's a great way for people, if they really just want to spice up their sex life or there's very simple solutions, there are great resources to find those. It's for the people that need more, that are still struggling. Then you want to reach out and get the help that you need.
Exactly. And, of course, Dr. Lori Buckley, and your website is drloribuckley.com. Did I get that right?
You did. It's perfect, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so between your website and all the sex education films you've narrated for the Sinclair Institute, and you and I narrated Great Sex for a Lifetime together through Sinclair, and that was for baby boomers. And that's been so helpful for a lot of my clients. And then you have a podcast and a book. And you have reached out in lots of ways because you have so much to offer, Lori Buckley. And so can they talk a little bit about your book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And what else they might find on your website?
Well, thank you. I'm happy to. I wanted to be able to help people who either don't necessarily need to come into therapy or who can't afford it. Not everybody can afford to come into therapy, or maybe they live far away. I mean, there's lots of, we'll say, obstacles that can get in the way, and I want to be able to give information that can help people. And my book is a very easy book to read. It just has some very clear-cut steps, and I say you just make one decision, and it's called 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And just making one decision, if you're consistent with it, by the way, one decision can change our whole life. It certainly can change our relationship and our sex life. So that was the premise of that, and a lot of people have said it's been incredibly helpful to them. So I'm very proud of that book, which you can find
on my website.
Yeah.
Yes, and I've referred it to people. It's very good and concise, and you're right. It's a quick read, and it gives a lot of good information. It's a small book, but it gives a lot of good information.
Yeah,
so you can find that on your website, and then
about your podcast. Yeah, my podcast, which, you know, we're both aligned here, but it's really wonderful to do the podcast, and you interview people. I used to interview people. Now it's just me and a co-host, and I talk about different topics. But I really enjoy it, and my clients listen to it, and people who aren't my clients, people from all over the world listen to it. And it's called Looking for Love and More, and that's exactly what it is. We talk about, I think last week we talked about porn. It was the truth about porn, and then we did an episode about when the person you love doesn't love you back. We did it. One of my most really listened to episodes is called Loneliness, which is, you know, telling. I think there's a lot of loneliness going on in the world, and it's something that we need to talk more about too. Just being able to find somebody who we connect with. We need to find them, know what we're looking for. When we find them, how do we keep them, and how do we keep that relationship vibrant and passionate and lifelong if that's what we want? So that's what my message is in my podcast.
Yeah. I'm so glad you did address loneliness, because we read and you hear, that it is really, I mean, I have individual clients as well as couples, and many of my single clients really are lonely, and it can impact your health tremendously not to have a community, to feel so isolated.
Or to be touched, even. I mean, these are needs
and touch
that as humans have. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And so I do that work too. So people come in, they're single, but they want to find a relationship, but they haven't been able to. They don't know what to do. I am also a dating coach. I have become a life coach, so I've taken a lot of different courses, and I've worked with a lot of people in finding love as well. And that's you would think easier nowadays because of all of the dating apps and all of the great resources, but it also makes it more complicated.
Yeah, because there's so many choices. So many. So might as well say I was going to wait to talk a little bit about this, but I think based on what we've just said, that we could get into it, that singles in therapy and coaching for online dating. I did not know you were a dating coach. You're perfect for it, though. Just perfect. I'm informally a dating coach. Well, I guess you are, too. Well, it's kind of through the therapy. But there were, and this was written, this was in Oprah magazine, and part of it is Helen Fisher's work. But just a couple of points, run the numbers to increase your odds. Forget chemistry and do the math. And one point is meet 9 people. And this is what Helen Fisher said. Our brains are best equipped to handle 5 to 9 options. Any more and we go into cognitive overload. And this is a quote from her. At that point, you just start looking for reasons to say no. Like, look at his ugly shoes.
I love her. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick 9. Meet in person. And then take a break while you get to know at least 1. And then she says, or they say, yeah, it's still Helen Fisher and Oprah magazine combined. Give it 3 dates. Even if you don't feel chemistry doesn't last. Attraction is important. And here's the, I love this. Listen to this. But if someone meets your needs, you may find attraction, the attraction follows. If someone meets your needs, you may find the attraction follows.
Now that is well said, except there is one thing that we have to add to that, and this is the thing that I talk about, and it's the thing that a lot of people miss, this one piece. You have to know the difference between your needs and your wants. So one, you have to be very, very aware of what your needs are. Because if you're not aware of them, you're not going to be looking in the right place. You're not going to be attuned to if this person is the right fit for you. And you have to know the difference between the needs and the wants. In other words, the needs are requirements. And if one need isn't met, you have to move on. Because inevitably, that relationship will not be able to end. And I always say that if our needs aren't being met, everything feels like a need. And we really can't stay in a, you know, strong enough to be in a loving, passionate relationship. So understanding what our needs are, that's an important step that a lot of people don't do before they actually start looking for someone that they want to be in a relationship with.
My recollection of your book is that you address that.
I might.
Did you address that in your book? I haven't read your book for a couple of years, but anyway, what I talk about, it's related to this, that one of the differences between need and want is that if you're in a serious relationship, say you're a woman, let's say you're in your late 20s and you're with a man that you really like, and you ought to be able to ask yourself, I want you even more than I need you. That is to say, you know, I can live without you, but I can live better with you.
Yes.
So that implies a self-sufficient woman who's not going to be needy and clingy, and because that'll drive a lot of men away. That's why she...
It always will, inevitably, unless it's not a healthy relationship and there's something going on that inevitably will end the relationship. If you've got two really needy people, And look, we all have needs. It's okay to have needs.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I like what you're saying. It's coming from what I call an above the line place, from a place of strength. And you don't feel like you're going to die without this person. Although I also do like the definition of mature love, which is, well, immature love is when you love somebody because you need them. So that, you know, we don't want to go down that road. But mature love is kind of cool in the sense that we need somebody because we love them, but we can still live without them. We don't want to live without them, but we're going to be okay.
Right. Which is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's what I'm saying, and you have another version of it, and it gives a very healthy message.
But it's the same. We're saying the same thing. I agree with you. And there are couples who start out like that, and it just doesn't end well. It really never ends well.
No.
So, really,
and a lot of times they're too young. That's changing, yes. But with my children, I said, wait till you're closer to 30. Before you marry, because you change so much in your 20s. And so sometimes you get very young, immature people who maybe are high school sweethearts, and they marry, and they don't know themselves very well, and that marriage often ends in divorce.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice when there are some people who meet when they're really young, and they make it work. They grow together. They have some hard years, but they work through it. I mean, that's always lovely, but it doesn't happen very frequently, and it's a very difficult thing to do. And you're right. We don't even know what we want. We don't know what our actual needs are when we're in our 20s. Generally, there are exceptions, of course, but really being able to be, like you were saying, to feel good by ourselves, to have a life that we feel really happy in. And when we are living a life that we love and we have friends and whatever those needs are in our life separate from a relationship, we generally will end up in a much better relationship. We will pick somebody who is on our level, and it feels much, much better. And so sometimes that takes age, but not always.
You're right. Not only. My parents married during World War II time, and there were many couples getting married young in their early 20s, as my parents did. And my mother always said, you know, we grew together. We grew up together. We grew together. But I liked my way better because I had all of my 20s to travel and play and work and find out what I was all about and why I quelled some of my wanderlust and with both travel and with men.
You had much more fun than your mom. We'll just go with that.
Well, probably so. Probably so.
We needed each other more, and there was the roles. Everybody had their roles, and it was what you were meant to do and supposed to do, and it worked for the most part. But we're going for much more in our lives now. We actually want to be happy. We live longer too, which is a whole other level.
And before we close this show, Lori, I do want to talk, because we both work with older couples, and. And with my gerontologist hat on, I work with quite a few older couples. So I want to talk about sex therapy with the older couples. But first, we had talked. I love my friend Lori Buckley, everybody. She's a wonderful woman.
And
we hadn't talked for a while, and we did talk last night, and it's like... like good friends, we just picked up where we last left off, right?
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, so we talked last night about why do we love our work so much? And when we spoke last night, we talked about, one reason I like my work, there are many reasons, but I won't age out of it, that my maturity and my experience is actually a plus when say, a software engineer in his 30s is looking for help, and they want an experienced, maybe even, for some of the listeners, this may sound weird, but maybe even a kind of a mother type, because she is older. So then I would become the good mother who encourages good, healthy sex, right?
You're the MILF, Diana.
The MILF, okay, okay.
You are the, the MILF. I mean, you are, you know, maybe maternal in some ways, and, you know, certainly experienced, and, you know, more than others. But you are sexy, and you are, you know, incredibly youthful. You have the combination of the two. You have that sexy youthfulness, but also, you know, with age and experience and wisdom, which is a really great combination.
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate that compliment.
Yeah, I hope I don't want to embarrass you, Diana. It's just a fact.
Not much can embarrass me.
Seen your picture. Yeah, own it. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. But why we love our work so much? So, you said last night in our conversation, and I agreed that one reason we like our work is that we continue to work and we become better therapists as we become more mature.
Yeah, and work with so many people. So we both grow. So the more people I see, which, you know, at this point is thousands, right? And you've been doing it even longer than I have. And I find that even with one client that I see, I will learn something. And so you add that up, seeing new people all the time and working with people, seeing what's possible, by the way, which is also incredibly rewarding and inspiring, where I know, and I say this to my couple sometimes, like, I have the advantage of knowing what's possible because I see it over and over and over again, where you might be coming from a place where it feels like an impossibility. I can tell you for a fact that you can do this, that we can change, we can grow, our relationships can get better. And I do have a couple of stories. Can I just tell a couple of stories real quick?
Absolutely, because that's part of what we wanted to talk about today, Lori, is some success stories. I love this idea about that you're saying, you're sharing with your couples what's possible. What's possible? So do tell us some success story.
Okay, I have two. One is about what we were talking about before. Actually, I've seen a handful of couples like this, and I imagine I'll see more as time goes on, just because of the world we live in with social media, where couples come in to see me. They're in their 60s, 70s even. They were high school sweethearts or knew each other when they were young, could be really young. It could be in high school, could be in college. And they went their separate ways for whatever reason. And 40, 50 years later, they reconnect. And they fall in love and they get married. And they're, you know, maybe they're widowed, maybe they're divorced. Oftentimes they're widowed. And they have found each other. And, I mean, it's such an incredible, like, I cry just thinking about it. It makes me so happy. I love a good love story. And they knew each other 40, 50 years ago, and here they are married, and they want to make sure that they're doing it right. And, you know, that just says we're never done. Like, we never know what's around the corner. They never in their wildest dreams would have imagined that they would end up back together and more in love than they've ever been, happier than they've ever been in their life, having the best sex that they've ever had. Now, you know, sometimes there's some hormonal issues or there's some quote-unquote performance issues, but that doesn't stop them, and they come in to see a sex therapist. I mean, that I just love. And so we're never too old, and whether to find love or to create something that we haven't experienced before. And then another couple,
Well, wait, before you, Lori, before you go to case two, Okay. I'm remembering a study done by a Sacramento psychologist, I think. This is many years ago. And she tracked down a couple of hundred couples who had been high school sweethearts and then got together. Her mark for the study was at least 25 years later. And she found that couples like this, and this was true for me and my late husband, Charlie, because we knew each other in college and got together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And after his wife died of cancer and I was divorced, we got together. Anyway, and I cited this study to Charlie, my late husband. So couples but it does depend on how they broke up. But if it was family interference, like the parents saying, oh, you know, you're too young, or, you know, he's not good enough for you, or whatever, or she isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it was just immaturity and some simpler reasons for breaking up. So they get back together. Sometimes it's as a result of the school reunion, right? The high school reunion. And because they're both more mature and they have some experience and they've been through a marriage, possibly two, they have kept their eyes open, they've learned and improved, and these marriages tend to be very strong.
Yeah.
And I remember with Charlie, because we were so pure, this was the time. I mean, we kissed and felt each other up a little bit. But it wasn't much more than that. We were so young, but you get back together. Now you've got sexual experience and maturity and life experience, and you had that chemistry back then, and now it really explodes. And it's good that these couples that you see have come to you, because they might have hit a few roadblocks in their sexual life together.
And sometimes it's just being proactive. It's kind of like, okay, we're great and everything's wonderful, but we want to make sure we don't go down the same path that we did in our other marriages. So it's not always because they're having problems. It's because they don't want to have problems and they want to have the best relationship ever. Because, you know, there's only so many years left, right? And
absolutely,
we don't want to mess around. We don't want to squander or waste any of those years. I mean, we don't want to do that at any age. But when we're in our 60s and 70s or 80s, you know, our years are numbered. And we want to make sure we're doing it right. And I think if everyone can do that, that would be fantastic. It's just easier, or we'll just say, you know, almost forced upon us to do it as we get older. But it's just such a wonderful thing to know that no matter what happens in your life, whether we have a spouse that dies or we get divorced or we're single for a long time and we have a hard time meeting somebody, which everybody goes through these kinds of things. We all go through struggles in life. We all go through loss that comes in many forms. And to know that there is something there around the corner if you want it and you do the work. You have to take some action. It doesn't just happen, but you also have to believe that it's possible. And so that's what we were saying, is we know what's possible because we see it over and over again. And to, I think, say to the listeners, to say, hey, no matter where you're at right now, we don't know. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe you're in an unhappy relationship. Maybe you're in a good relationship, but you're not having sex anymore. It doesn't mean it's the end. Like, keep going. There are so many possibilities and options for you. And that's, I think, one of the great things that you can do when you get some help, when you know things are possible, and sometimes we need to get the help to do it. It's here. So whether, you know, it's a sex therapist or a coach or a couples therapist, whatever it is that's going on for you, there's help out there that you can get that can change your life.
Help and hope.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I say to my couple as they're leaving, this is usually after the first or second session, I'll say, well, I hope that you're feeling more hopeful. And they'll say yes.
Yeah.
And it's all, you're right, Lori, it's about being optimistic and being hopeful. And with my gerontologist hat on, and I got to call myself a gerontologist because in the early 90s, I did two studies on aging and sexuality with a medical doctor, Dr. Walter Bortz. And then we published these studies in two medical journals. And so after that, because I had studied aging and sexuality, I got to call myself a gerontologist. But one of the things I want to say with my gerontologist hat on is that a really nice thing often happens as we age. Men are become more willing to allow someone to know them and are more likely to accept an equal relationship with a woman. And women accept their own eroticism and can stop pretending that men know more about vaginas than they do.
I love it. And your background in gerontology, I mean, that's such a great gift, and to be able to have that information and those skills to be able to help on a whole other level. I mean, that's really beneficial, I imagine, for a lot of couples. So I love that you have that background. I think that probably comes in handy and can be really helpful in so many ways.
I started it many years ago, and now I'm in that field definitely as a senior, and I think it's on some level it's made me better as an older lover with my husband and with my former husbands, especially the last former husband who died. But just to be patient, you know, with yourself and to slow down.
Yeah, and know
and
that
a lot of
change.
Older couples
there's
need to know that there's. Don't you use those two words a lot, Lori? Slow down?
Oh, yeah. Especially to men.
That's right.
Slow down. But sex changes. Our
absolutely.
Sex is different in our 50s and our 60s and our 70s than it did in our 20s and 30s. I think it gets better. I'm pretty sure you would agree. It's different. Not
yes.
that it's not good in your 20s and 30s. It's just very different. But I think it's so much more pleasurable and passionate and satisfying. Again, if you want that, it does take some intention and some knowledge and some practice, but that's part of the fun. That's our homework that we give, right?
Yeah. Now,
our home play.
This is a good
yeah.
segue before we run out of time. The homework that you and I often give is neither one of us calls it Sensate Focus homework, but Masters and Johnson, the sex researchers of the 50s and 60s who did so much, and I recently watched some old seasons of Masters of Sex, which was originally broadcast on HBO. It's fascinating. I was telling you a little bit about it last night, Lori. So Virginia Masters, her lover was William Masters, and he had some ED problems, erectile dysfunction problems, and she came up with touching to relax him, and that was the birth of the Sensate Focus. They felt that people not only needed to be relaxed before they engaged in sexual activity, but people were too focused between the legs, that there are all these other parts of our bodies that have erotic potential. And so the caressing exercises, and I will just say, and then I want you to talk about this, that initially, and I give these exercises to most of my couples with a handout so that they don't forget, but so I write, initially, the exercises are done without leading to intercourse to alleviate the stress and pressure some couples may feel with performance anxiety related to intercourse. The couple explores each other's bodies through touching, stroking, caressing in ways that are mutually gratifying. Can you expand on that and how you use it with your couples?
Yeah, it's, you know, so many people are so goal-focused. So we have to have intercourse, and the guy has to get erect, and he has to keep his erection, and he can't come too soon, and she has to get wet, and he needs to make her come, and she has to come to make him happy. And so we're in our head, and we're trying to do all these things. And sometimes the woman is, you know, she's an erection, he has an erection, so he's in a hurry. So this is where the slowdown could come in. So it's like, you know, he's on top of her, and they're having intercourse because that's what the goal is for so many people. But she didn't have enough time to get sufficiently aroused, so she's having obligatory sex because she wants to make him happy. But she's not getting necessarily what she needs, and he's not getting a turned-on partner as much as he would like. I mean, these are just some of the things that happen when we are not in the moment, when we're not really focusing on the experience or our pleasure. So that can get in the way. So by taking, because one of the important parts of this is taking sex off the table. It's like no sex allowed. So what's interesting about that is it gives
no intercourse allowed.
No intercourse allowed. So it gives them a chance to be able to experience pleasure without just thinking about, oh, I have to get an erection, or oh, she has to come, or oh, I can't come, or all of that stuff that gets in the way, all of the noise. It stops it, and it just puts you in a mindfulness place to focus purely on pleasure and to touch each other's bodies. It also gives a level of eroticism. Now, I don't think Masters and Johnson thought about this, but it is a fact, and I know you know what I'm talking about, because there'll be people who come to see me, they're like, we haven't had sex for 3 years, 10 years, whatever amount of years it is, and I give them this assignment, and also the handout, and I say, now no sex is allowed, and they laugh. They're like, oh, Lori, we haven't had sex for years, that's not a problem. I said, great. So it won't be a problem. No sex allowed. You're taking it off the table, and this is what you're going to do. And sure enough, you know, very often they come in with that look on their face, right? like they just ate the last cookie in the cookie jar, and I know already what happened. They had sex. Now, why? Because when you take something off the table, they're not allowed to. Not only is it creating space for them to actually experience pleasure and get aroused, there's also some eroticism that comes in there. It's like, oh, this is new. I can't do this. And we often want what we can't have. So it's so wonderful on so many levels. And this is something anybody can do. Say, hey, let's just take sex off the table, no intercourse, but let's, you know, and I also tell them they schedule it, right? So they have their schedules once or twice a week where they do what I call mindful pleasurable touch. They do this exercise. And I tell them that sex isn't allowed. It frees them up on all those other days to tease each other, to taunt each other, to touch each other, to be affectionate and kiss one another. Because generally that probably stops. You know, because they don't want to give the other person the wrong idea. They don't want to feel rejected, or they don't want to, you know, want to reject their partner. So they stop touching. They stop all that fun, sexy teasing and playfulness. So I encourage them on those other days. Now, like you said, we need to make sure that they have a relationship going. Sometimes it takes some time before they get here. But to create that space for them to really tease one another, because sex isn't going to happen. So they can make out, they can dry hump, they can really have a lot of fun. And it just creates a whole different way of being together sexually.
I absolutely agree with you, and I'll add one more thing. Sometimes I get couples who come back after, I usually see people every 2 weeks, so they've had week one and two with the sensate focus, caressing, you call it mindful pleasurable exercises. But so the week one and two, you're focusing on face, the head, the hands, the feet, first with fingers and lips and varying touches. And week two, continue with week one and light teasing and with genital and breaststroking and exploration, but you can now touch genitalia and breasts, but still no intercourse or penetration. Mutual, anyway, so on. So, but then they'll come back because they're not allowed to have intercourse, PIV, penis and vagina, the first couple of weeks, according to these exercises. But they'll come back, right, and they said, oh, well, we got so turned on, and my husband or my male partner, who's been having erectile dysfunction, grew an erection. You got so turned on.
Yep, the equipment.
And
works.
So we disobeyed. Yeah. We went on to have intercourse.
I love it.
And actually, you know, they said we didn't follow the exercise, but I said, you know, that's all right. But don't go back to the exercises too, and just feel how good it feels to have pleasure in different parts of your body and not get stuck between the legs.
Exactly.
There's this feast, this feast from the top of our heads to the bottom of our toes or feet.
Yeah, and so many different ways to experience pleasure. And it really is, it's such a wonderful experience to be able to just touch and be touched by your partner in that way. It's very, let's say, filled with love, so there's a lot of loving energy and looking into each other's eyes. But again, it can also be erotic. You know, they'll say, oh, we've been bad. They like being bad. You know, it's a good thing. They haven't been bad in a long time, so they've been, I like to say, they're naughty. I'm like, oh, you've been naughty. They like
naughty,
being naughty.
Right.
Add some playfulness. Yes. Yes. So it's starting
to... the playfulness. And I remember years ago, you and your late partner, Alan, were in Seattle, and I remember one of the things you said, because we'd all been going to the Gottman conference together, and one of the things you said that has stuck with me, that you asked couples, a brand new couple you might be seeing, well, when was the last time you two had any fun together? And you reported, they often look at each other kind of blankly, like, oh, no, well, we haven't had much fun lately. And and that is so true. I mean, our job as sex therapists is to help the couple rediscover play and fun and have date nights and keep it more positive and playful. I mean, sex is play. Sex is play.
Well,
and sex toys are adult toys.
Yeah. Ideally, but for many couples, it isn't, and that's what we want to help them have in their life. So you need to play outside of the bedroom and in the bedroom, and it becomes something that's incredible. I do want to just give my last story, because I think it's appropriate about hope and about what's possible. I had a couple come in. Yeah, they came in, I don't know, probably maybe like 6 weeks ago, and I am not exaggerating. They've been married their whole adult life, kids. They're actually not that old. They're in their 50s, maybe mid 50s. And, you know, basically he's the one who wanted to come in. And she says to me in front of him, she says, he repulses me. I can't stand him. I really don't want to have anything to do with him. I don't want him to touch me. And she goes on about how she doesn't really want to be married and she really doesn't even like him. And he said,
oh, that was,
you know,
hard for him to hear.
Oh my God, I'm not even giving you the details. It was rough. I said, you are shaming him. She's like, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I told her that when he wasn't in the room. I said, it's just horrible. But he was, you know what? I screwed up. I spent all my life working. I neglected her, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I told them after, I think maybe our second session, I said, I actually think you two can be a great couple. I said, I think you two can create a relationship that you've never had. And they kind of looked at me. And I kid you not, less than 6 weeks later, they come in, and they're like, and I am not exaggerating, and I just get teary-eyed thinking about it. They are like two kids in love, and they have never felt like this in their life. That night I saw them, they said, oh, this weekend we're going away for a sex weekend, and we have our chest, or, you know, we have a chest filled with sex toys, and we're going to just, doesn't matter where we go, we're just staying in a hotel, and we are just going to play and have fun. And they are like madly in love. And he said, when we saw you and you said you thought that we would be a good couple or that we could do this, we kind of, we laughed and thought you were crazy. But they kept seeing me. So obviously they didn't think I was too crazy. But I could see. I mean, I said, I've been doing this a long time. I can tell. And I knew that even though she was so harsh and mean, she was in pain. I could tell that she loved him and that she was in pain. And I knew that when he said, I will do whatever it takes, that he was going to do whatever it took. And he did. And that doesn't always happen that quickly, but that is a story that we, no matter how bad of a relationship you're in or what's happening, there really is reason to feel hopeful that things can change if you're willing to do what it takes, if you want it bad enough.
You were brilliant as a therapist with this couple because you paid attention. And you use your skills that you've been honing for years, and I think that lots of couples can be inspired by the therapist's hopefulness, because I've said the same thing. You know, you too, as a couple, there is hope here because you have many things in the foundation of your marriage that work quite well. Now, when you add sex to it, you're going to be magnificent. You're going to feel closer and at times, and it's going to help you, and especially for older couples that are semi-retired or retired, any couples actually, right? But couples that need to re-engage in sex, and I think your message to them really got through, and they have created a whole new life for themselves. Good for you, Lori.
Oh,
good for you,
Diana,
as a sex therapist.
Yeah, I once went to a couples therapist. I was married. I went to a marriage therapist, and I said, "Oh shoot,
that's our music."
Anyway,
well, we're gonna maybe, Lori. I hope we'll do a part two, because we have so much more to say.
I know we can.
Thank
we
you,
can
Lori.
On. I love you. Thank you for having
love
me.
You too, darling. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Diana.